Well, hi there, it's Matthew Blades, and welcome to another episode of Learn From People Who Lived It. Today, you are in for a treat as we sit down with Tiffany Stevens.
That was rough for me. And so making sure that I knew Dad loved me and he wasn't there. And even when he got out of jail, he was addicted to drugs, you know, so he wasn't around. But I got to choose how I looked at that. Oh, you know, he's choosing me over the drugs versus he's an addict, right? And it's best for me that when he's in his addiction, that he stays away from me.
So that just gives you a glimpse into the way that she sees the world, right? So many of us would be angry at that situation, or that situation would completely own us in all ways, shapes, and forms. But she seemingly got her head around it. And now that she's in the field where she's helping other people, you know, step into abundance, set down that old story, tap into their own inner strength, she's the perfect podcast for you and for me today. Well, quick word from our resource partners at Mental Joe, and then we'll jump into it with Tiffany Stevens today on Learn From People Who Lived It. Quick reminder, always love getting reviews and or your 5 stars wherever you listen to podcasts. If that's Apple, please consider leaving a review. If it is Spotify, please consider interacting and asking a question. We're wide open. I love your feedback. It's great to know people are out there and they're listening and they're being changed and moved by these stories that we present here on this podcast.
At Mental Joe, they sell more than shirts. They sell apparel with a purpose. In fact, my favorite hoodie in my closet is a Mental Joe hoodie. They help out G.I. Joes to the average Joe's one t-shirt at a time. With every purchase, you help them support organizations that can provide services to help others get out of their heads and into their bodies through plant medicines, equine therapy, yoga, and other non-traditional mental health treatments. Link to them. Pick out your favorite t-shirt or hoodie right now at learnfrompeoplewholivedit.com/resources.
Looking for no bullshit conversation about mental health? Find Learn From People Who Lived It wherever you get podcast. Search it using all one word. Learn from people who lived it.
Welcome to another episode of Learn from People Who Lived It.
Hi, I am Tiffany Stevens McDowell from Chicago, Illinois.
What story are you here to share today, Tiffany?
I am here to share a story of healing, resilience, purpose, and power. I like to think of it as a story that helps, you know, somebody begin to turn loss, trauma, and tragedy into triumph.
Okay. Who do you hope hears this?
I hope people who feel powerless and stuck in grief and trauma, feeling like they have no way out, can hear this. Basically, anyone that wants to go from being stuck in scarcity to abiding in abundance.
Yeah, let's go. And that should be just about everybody who's paying attention, because, you know, it is easy. And you and I are going to have this conversation today, but it's real easy to get comfortable. And when you're sitting in familiar territory, it's easy to not want to move out of it and whatnot. But man, when you can step into what truly can be a better life, there's so many cool things that come along with that. And I know we're going to jump into all of it. Tiffany, welcome to Learn From People Who Lived It today. How is the weather currently in Chicago?
Well, thank you for having me here. The weather in Chicago is perfect today.
It is. I mean, okay.
It's like 51 degrees in February.
Take it, bottle it up, try to keep it forever because you know the storm is coming. On my podcast, Tiffany, I love to get that. I love to ask people to start with their own personal 0 to 10 story. And so because of the fact that I think it gives us a good snapshot into who people are, why they tick the way they tick, you know, those types of things. And I'm sure you work in the counseling world now, so you probably know where and why I'm asking you to do this. But will you give us a little snapshot? What was your life like, Tiffany, from 0 to 10?
Let's say I don't remember much from maybe like 0 to 5, but like the memories that I do have includes my mom, my dad, and my brother and myself moving into the Ida B. Wells Projects on the south side of Chicago, and my father being a really huge part of my life, like loving me, expressing love by riding a bike during a storm to get me a happy meal. I remember him carrying me just about everywhere I went. And looking back, I say the struggle was pretty real for me, but it didn't feel like it.
Were your mom and dad like pretty loving with each other?
Yeah, they were really loving with each other. But I think things kind of took a turn, I would say between 5 and 10. Mm. And during that time, it was I would say one of the best and a few of the worst things that happened to me happened during that time. One of the hardest things was that my father was sentenced to 5 years in prison for armed robbery. Between 0 to 5, he got addicted to drugs. And so I didn't know. I had no way of knowing. I was so young. I just felt the love from my dad. Also during that time, I witnessed one of my uncles brutally attacking his girlfriend. So that was really hard.
But can I ask you a question really quick? Sure. When your dad goes to prison, what did he say to you?
He didn't say anything.
Oh, really?
But the story was that he went and he moved because he got accepted into the fire academy. So that was the story.
Okay. Okay.
And for me, dad didn't leave. Things just changed because I still saw him frequently. I talked to him on my birthday. I talked to him on holidays. So he was kind of always there. My mom made sure we saw him, or my paternal grandmother made sure that we saw him.
That's great. Okay. Yeah. But witnessing this domestic violence episode, that must have been pretty tough. How old were you then?
I had to be around maybe 9 years old. When we were living in the projects, my mother at this time, you know, was a single mom because my dad had been sent to prison. So my uncle helped take care of us. And we were at his house one day after school, hanging out, and my mom came to pick us up. Well, let me backtrack. Before he left, I remember his girlfriend saying, "Al, if you go out, I won't be here when you get back." And I was thinking, that is so weird. Like, people leave all the time. Like, I just didn't get it. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that when he left and came back, he'd be a completely different person, that literally her life would be on the line.
Yeah, okay.
So my mom, he went out. So my mom rushed, left work early. She came to get us. I don't know if I went back in the apartment to get something. I don't know how, but my mom got out with my brother. And by this time I have a sister. So she gets everybody out. Somehow I'm stuck in the apartment and I'm just watching this brutal attack. And it was rough. And
did it make you angry? Scared?
I was confused and I was very afraid. Yeah, very. And I want to say that was one of the moments, even at that young age, that really changed my life and how I look at men and how I look at relationships and knowing what I wanted and what I didn't want. It was very clear to me, even at that age.
You know, we talk a lot about relational programming here on this podcast, and I'll define that as kind of what you just talked about, that stuff we see on the way up that kind of wires us to be and act a certain way. And I would imagine that after witnessing a domestic violence episode like that, what you just said would be 100% true. It would make sense to me that the way you look at men would shift. Was that hard for you? Did that show up for you when you were dating as a girl? When did that show up for you as you were making the selection process for a husband once upon a time? Like, was that something that you had to overcome and do work on?
You know, I want to say that I am grateful because I have all uncles and one aunt on my dad's side, and my mom is the only girl of six. And so I was able to get lots of hugs and kisses and compliments and just men really showing me a whole lot of love. And so I felt really confident. And I didn't let that experience sour me against men, right?
That's
but I
incredible.
Knew what it was like to be loved. And I knew what it was like. And I saw what it was like to not have that, you know, the opposite of it. And I think also during that time, a really powerful thing happened. My mom and my grandma took me to church and we went to Christ Universal Temple in Chicago. And at the time, the Reverend Dr. Johnny Coleman was the minister. Now we have Reverend Dr. Derby Wells. We're under his leadership. And so within that, I was able to learn different things that really helped change my mindset, help give me a different perspective on life. And so
like what?
That,
like that you're part of something bigger, that you have a...
I'm part of something bigger.
Yeah, okay.
And also, it's not traditional Christianity. It's more New Thought Christianity.
Okay.
And so I always knew how powerful I was. I always knew that God was within me. And I learned from a really young age that if it was to be, it was up to me. And so having those affirmations, doing vision boards and treasure mapping as a child, all of those things really helped.
Oh, that's incredible. Well, that, I mean, that's a really, you're right. There's a couple of big things there from mm-hmm. 0 to 10 that are guaranteed to leave a mark or at least change the way that things look moving after that. Yeah. I think it, I wish that I had one of my doctors on this particular podcast, because I have two. One, I have a psychiatrist and I've got a psychologist that are able to join us, and one just couldn't today, because you must be almost an anomaly to witness that domestic violence and not have it sour you or taint the way you see things, but to truly what looks like on the other side here, you know, I mean, use it for good. You are the CEO of Graceful Growth Counseling. Mm-hmm. Like, you've turned this into something that's powerful. And that's freaking incredible. Was that the only domestic violence episode you ever witnessed in your life?
Yeah, and I was gonna say, I think that helped. Like, it was that one, it was pretty bad, but I didn't see it other than movies. I didn't see it anywhere else. So it's not something that I saw on a day-to-day basis, because I know when somebody, especially a child, is exposed to trauma at that level, it can certainly have an impact on them, you know? So, like I said, I think for me, the biggest thing was having a dad that was super loving at a really young age, and then not having that in the same way. That was rough for me. And so making sure that I knew dad loved me and he wasn't there. And even when he got out of jail, he was addicted to drugs, you know, so he wasn't around. But I got to choose how I looked at that. Oh, you know, he's choosing me over the drugs versus he's an addict, right? And it's best for me that when he's in his addiction, that he stays away from me. And being able to appreciate him for that versus being angry and upset with him, right? And that is not always easy, but I knew it was necessary for me. Like, it's important for me to exercise my power so that I am in a peaceful state.
Yes. Oh my God, I love this so much. A couple of you don't know this about me, Tiffany, but a couple of years ago, I walked away from my radio career due to a mental breakdown. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me. And I'm so grateful for it. Mm-hmm. And I love it fiercely that it happened. I don't love the way that it unfolded necessarily, but we don't get to choose those things. Yeah. And one of the things that I always used to say to my wife when I was really in my darkness was, babe, like, when I'm in my darkness and I'm angry, like, you have to know that's not me. That's mm-hmm. That's the sickness. Like, that's yeah. the mental illness that I'm dealing with right now. And mm-hmm. so, you know, please don't make the mistake of thinking that that's who I am now. It's mm-hmm. just that I'm going through this. And you just articulated that so beautifully yeah. with the addict piece. You said, mm-hmm. I'm not going to look at him like, oh, he's choosing me, the drugs over me, and what a crappy dad. Like, no, mm-hmm. you just saw him for his sickness. Yeah. He was ill. Yeah. And you had compassion for that.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't the totality of him, right? That was a part of who he is.
Right.
And I say is because addict. He's still an addict. He's clean now. But that's a part of him.
Yeah.
That I accept.
How did he come back into your life? Because I'm assuming he got out of jail, he came back in. What did that look like?
Well, he got out of jail. He came back in.
Uh-huh.
My mom, my dad, they tried to pick up like he wasn't gone for 5 years.
How did that work out?
Yeah, not great. Because
yeah, right.
Drugs, right? And so my mom, single mom, and I want to say we were poor, but I never felt it. I never, ever felt like it. And excuse me.
You're fine.
And my mom she went out and she got all of these things for Christmas. Like, we always had really big Christmases with lots of presents. And he stole Christmas, and that was the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sucks. Yep. That sucks. I'm going to guess your kids now have the most legendary Christmases, because you will never allow that to happen, right?
Oh, no. And even that story, I didn't find out until I was older. Like, my mom.
Oh, really?
Crouched up Christmas somehow. But I found out later that that's what happened.
Gosh. What's your relationship like with your mom? I mean, she sounds like she's incredible.
If you want to bring me to tears, Matthew, ask me about my mom. But she is amazing. And she's also a part of, you know, why I do what I do. My mom was diagnosed with breast cancer. I don't even know the year, but she's good now. And even through that, it was really tough. And I said, no, I cannot change what's happening, right? But I can change how I look at her. I could always look at her and see somebody that's perfect, whole, and complete. I can take the things that I do for myself and write them down and hope that other survivors and their family members can benefit from this information and these tools and interventions. And I wrote Pretty in Pink, a book, and I never really released it. Like, people who knew and they bought copies, but it was never like a big thing that I was promoting because I was really doing it as my own healing.
That's cool.
For my own healing. Yep. But me and my mom, we're super, super close.
Yeah. And that's also just it's incredible to me because, you know, I mean, she does all these little things along the way, the right way, like, and maybe not always like the right thing. Like, clearly she lies to you about a couple of things that are going on, but yeah. You know, you could make the argument she's protecting you and she's protecting the relationship that you're going to have with your father. And, you know, and even though if it didn't work out between the two of them, the fact that you still talk about your dad and you don't sound super sour about it. And that's not to say that there aren't sour days, but you know, overall you feel like, I don't know, I get the sense from you, you got a pretty good attitude about the whole thing. Like, yeah, your mom she's pretty awesome. She found a way to get this information to you. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. All right. We know what's up now. Okay, everybody, you understand the score. You understand how Tiffany started and where she is now. She's a mom now. She's got a couple of kids. How long have you been married now?
3 years.
Okay.
3 years, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, when you get married and you have your kids, that's when you really start to figure out who you are. And that's when the real lessons come into play. I mean, you will never learn as much about yourself as when, I always say this, Tiffany, this is a famous saying of mine, is when somebody dies or you have kids. I think death is one of the greatest teachers we'll ever know. And I think children are probably right there, if not one and two, they share that. So, I'm going to ask you a question before I ask you about sort of your how-tos and some of the tools that you've used to cycle out of this and get your mind the way that it is. What has having children taught you about yourself? I love the deep sigh every parent takes. That's awesome.
It taught me that I am resilient. It taught me that I'm not in control. Like, you know, there's a higher power and that I'm not going to always be in control, but it really just opened my heart in a way that I could have never imagined.
Yeah.
And I have one biological child. She's 21 now. And she, you know, she has her own things, you know, that she's going through.
Of course.
And to see your baby, because I don't care how old she gets, that's my baby, go through things. And there's nothing you can do about it. You can't even take all of the wisdom and spirituality and take it out of you and dump it in her, right? Like, knowing that you have to take a step back and allow this person to grow and have their own journey and their own experience and their own soul unfoldment, so to speak. So that is, you know. That's
a big adjustment because what happens is our kids come out and they trick us, they fool us. And so they listen to us for like 8 to 10 years. They listen to everything we say. They do almost everything we ask them to do. And then like overnight at like 13 or 14, they stop listening to anything we say, but we've been programmed that they listen. And so we keep trying for like another 10 or 15 years and it just doesn't work.
Yep. And it, for me, it was the, I used to need you and now I don't. I used to listen and now I don't. And so it's just a difference because what your child needs as a small kid is different than a young adult. And so you have to learn to adjust. And that's not always an easy transition. So I know for me, it was essential for me to grieve and mourn the loss of a child, right? So that I could embrace and welcome this young woman.
I love that. And I love what you're talking about. And just to make sure that didn't go over anybody's head, she's literally talking about grieving the relationship that she had with her still living daughter when she was a certain age and now getting used to this new relationship that she has to have. That's such a beautiful, beautiful piece. And I put on these grief relief retreats, Tiffany, here in the Phoenix area. And, you know, people grieve all different kinds of things, all different kinds of ways. You grieve grieve when you lose a job. You grieve when you get a divorce. You grieve when somebody dies. You grieve when your little girl gets older. Like, it just doesn't matter. Grief is just a part of the process. And so what can you teach us about grief through the lens of Tiffany? What were some of the tools that you used to make that transition with your own daughter?
Self-compassion.
Okay.
Acceptance. You know, we all go through the stages of grief, and realizing that it's okay if that's not linear, right? That feelings change. In 1 minute, I can be, you know, fully standing in anger, the next acceptance. And so it's a process that you want to make sure that you honor and you have compassion with yourself for.
Let's go deeper on that, self-compassion. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
So it's saying, you know, how are you talking to yourself? How are you treating yourself? Are you being gentle with yourself? If 13-year-old you would come to you with the same issue, would you beat yourself up for not being over it? You know, would you beat that young kid up for not being over it? You know, and the answer many times is no. But we often say, I should be over this. I'm tired of crying. I just want to get through it, you know. And so it's just saying, how can I take care of me? How can I understand what I'm going through and allow space for that?
You're incredible. You talked about acceptance. Mm-hmm. Let's dive in on that a little bit more. Acceptance of what?
Acceptance that what is happening, and you cannot change oftentimes what's happening, but you can change your perspective, right? You can change your attitude towards it. And so I think about just making sure that I am not giving something more meaning or different meaning than what's really there.
Oh man. Okay. I'm going to press even more on this because now you're in my lane and I love it. I was on a podcast earlier today and I was talking about the value that every one of us gives every single situation that we've ever had. From I went to return a shirt at Target and the person behind the counter sucked. And now every time you go to Target, you think about how much they suck. And it's like, so that little to kind of more of the stuff you're talking about, which is, I mean, it could have been easy for you to give a ton of weight to that experience that happened with your dad, right? But you chose not to do that. You've chosen to look at it a different way and to use your word, accept it for what it is, not more than it is, for what it is.
For what it is. Yep.
So, yeah, I'm going to ask you to drill down on that a little bit more. How were you able to do that? Or what's some of the things that you help you know, some of your clients and folks that you get to work with every single day on that thing of, hey, stop giving that so much value?
Yeah, one of the things I think that really opens the door to acceptance is forgiveness. That's huge. And a lot of times people, they're like, no, I can never forgive. And I get that because that has to be something that a person is ready for. Yes. But also, you know, a lot of times when I ask clients, like, you know, have you thought about forgiving? Or where are you in the process? Oh, I could never forgive. And then when I say, okay, well, what do you really want? A lot of times what they describe and what they share with me is forgiveness. It sounds just like forgiveness, right? And so just being open to forgiveness, being very clear on how you define forgiveness and realizing what it is and what it's not.
Yeah. I've been working a lot on the forgiveness piece over the last couple of years. Tiffany, mm-hmm. Let me get your opinion on this. One of the things that I think is a real truth is what you just said, that idea that some people feel like the thing that happened to them was so bad, there's no way they could ever, ever, ever forgive that person. And sometimes, just to drill down on this a little bit more, sometimes the person that you need to forgive and let off the hook is yourself, right? And that's a huge piece of it. But let's just pretend that there's something that somebody did to you or somebody you love, and you're like, I could never forgive them. Mm-hmm. Here's a little tool that I've landed on that I think is a really beautiful way to plant the seed, if you will. I'm not going to ask anybody listening right now to just jump into forgiveness if you're not ready. Like Tiffany said, you have to be ready for it. But I want you to think about it like this and just spend some time with this concept over the next few days. What would a path to forgiveness look like? So, you know, I really want people to kind of really key in on that thought. What would a path to forgiveness look like? And start to observe it from that 30,000 foot view. I'm not saying forgive, but I'm saying if you were going to forgive that person, what would the path to forgiveness look like? As I explain that tool, what do you think about and how can you add some color and light to that?
What comes up for me, and I want to say it's Neil Donald Walsh, I'm not sure, but forgiveness is, you know, giving up hopes for a better past, giving up hope that something different could have happened. I think that's huge to say, you know what, this is what has happened.
Yeah.
I can't change that. How can I change me? How can I change my perspective? And I think that for me has been, it's been my ticket to
Say that quote again about hope. It's given up what?
Given up all hope for a better past. I hope I'm quoting it right, but that's how I remember. So I'll just say I'm not quoting it, I'm paraphrasing it.
It's such a brilliant thing to think about because I'm just convinced of it. I think at the root of so much of our mental health struggles right now is the way that all of us feel about ourselves. Mm-hmm. And most of us are carrying baggage that just absolutely belongs in 1998. Like it just doesn't have any purpose or value here in 2024. And the idea that you have to hang on to that crap because that's who you think you are, it's fatiguing. Like you're gonna, I'm not joking when I say you're gonna die with that kind of a story. And it may not be some fast death, but you're going to get sick. You're going to stop moving. You're going to, like, things are going to happen for you that you don't want. And that's why I just love this conversation so much. And it's so fun for me, Tiffany, because I almost never know exactly who's going to be on the other side of these calls. And the truth you are spitting today is absolutely on point. And
you and I are
like in the same brain right now with some of this stuff. And so I just love this discussion. Let's keep moving though. Mm-hmm. You talked about self-compassion, you talk about acceptance. And then what was the next key for you?
Realizing that I am a powerful being.
Okay.
So I have the power to change, right?
And so whatever was
holding me hostage to something that happened in the past, I don't have to be that. Yes. I get to choose every day, every minute, every second, right?
Yes.
We are constantly choosing, you know, and having free will. We can change and we can challenge ourselves and we can become more self-aware.
So here's a really hard, I'm going to ask you a hard question. Yeah, I'm going to ask you a hard question, okay? Because you know as well as I do in the work that you do, and I talk to people almost every day of my life, they will come to me and in their head, they don't think they have free will. In their head, the story, it's so deeply rooted in nothing that's really true. I mean, there may be moments of truth, but like outdated truths is a good way to put that. So how do you help folks turn that light on and get them to elect into free will and understand that maybe they don't even have to buy into it, but they can be open to it?
It takes, especially in therapy, it can take a really, really long time, but it's validating that person.
Yeah.
It's not to say that this didn't happen. It did happen and it's hard and it sucks, right? But you still get to choose. And so some of the things is, you know, you validate, you ask different questions, you consistently ask, like, what is it that you want? What do you think is holding you back and keeping you back from what you
want? Because do you know how many people have stopped asking themselves what they want? Like many people have stopped asking themselves what they want and need.
Yeah. Because a lot of times they don't believe that it's possible. And they are afraid of the disappointment and the hurt. And then sometimes it's hard to step out of the shadows of being a victim.
That's the ticket right there.
Many people never stop to say, what am I getting out of being stuck in this? And a lot of times people say, I don't get anything from it. But yeah, you do. you get something from it. And so we uncover that in session. But it's just really being there for people, being a stand, standing in the gap, believing even when they don't believe. Being patient is a huge one, right?
Yes.
But also reminding people, because sometimes people have to hear it over and over, you are powerful, you have a choice. It can take a long time for people to finally get that, but when they get it, they get it.
Okay, I got to show everybody a clip here. I'm going to play something for you, Tiffany. This is a couple of weeks ago, I had a woman on my show named Courtney McDermott, mm-hmm. and she talks a lot about the same stuff that you and I talk mm-hmm. about, and it's fantastic. And it's only 22 seconds long, but listen to this. This is why most of us are stuck in this story. This is really perfect timing. Check this out.
Imagine you got this vast library, right? You got all the books ever written. You got all the potentials, right? And you just, not you personally, this is not your case, but oftentimes most of us, and for different parts in our lives too, this can just apply to a phase of our life. We're taking out the same book every day. And we're like, this is my book.
That's exactly what you and I are talking about.
Yeah. Because you take that book because that's the book you know. You're familiar with that book. Right. And it's change when you think about doing something different. And it's good change, but it's still change. So it can be scary because you don't always know what's on the other side of it.
That's what I think it is. As I've gotten a little bit deeper in my journey, mm-hmm. I think more people are afraid of how good it could be. And that's what keeps them from doing it, is because they're like, I don't know, this might be really good.
And it's interesting because they get there and you're like, oh, I got them. They're almost there. Then they say, but, and I'm like, what?
But what?
But what? And then they say, but such and such and such and such. And I got this from my husband, and it sounds really harsh, but it's like, so what? So what? And that forces them to think about things in a different way too.
Yeah. Okay. So what are you, you have this grief, or not grief, but it's a growth counseling center. Yeah. And just really quickly, when did you open that shop up?
Graceful Growth Counseling Services. I started in 2019, which was an interesting time to start a business. And it was myself, solo practitioner, only therapist in the practice. And over the pandemic, we grew to, I added like 8 other therapists. And so now we're at 12, and it's great and it's amazing. And we're obviously a virtual practice now, but it's great, and we're doing amazing things. And that all stemmed from me experiencing the loss of my girlfriend through domestic violence and having gone through counseling, blaming myself for everything that happened at a period of time, because all of the things that I talk about, it's just not to say that I don't go through things and I don't have my days, right? But I feel blessed that I'm able to come out of it quicker. But that was a rough time. And I was at a job that I didn't feel I didn't fit there. So I was out of alignment. And I started volunteering at a domestic violence shelter and was like, wow, you know, I love this. I love this. I always had a passion for helping women. I had a not-for-profit called the Glam Foundation. But when that happened, it allowed me to just take it to another level and create something that was super special to help thousands of people. And so Graceful Growth caters to women who are managing depression, anxiety, battling and struggling with self-love.
So I want to ask you, as a practitioner, what are some of the most common things people are coming to you with these days? Like, is there a common through line with a lot of the folks that you see?
A lot of the people that we see now, they are struggling with anxiety. Many people are struggling with anxiety. And I have been out of practice for almost a year and a half now. And so now I'm kind of coaching other therapists to start their private practice. I'm providing consultation, running the business. And so I'm not working in the business as much.
Okay.
But just from what I've reviewed and notes and things like that and supervision, it's a lot of anxiety.
Right. And anxiety and depression, they're very different things, but sometimes we lump them together because most people that are anxious, you know, have a little bit of depression and maybe vice versa. What do you think people are anxious about?
A lot of times people are anxious because they are spending a lot of time in the past or a whole lot of time in the future. And so just not being mindful and present in the moment is happening. I really do believe that social media has a big impact on people as well. People are looking at what they think they should be and really being down on themselves when they feel like they're not living up to whatever that is.
Yeah.
And so we see a lot of that in the practice.
You know, what you have to remember, everybody, is that the social media giants have hired literally the most brilliant psychologists, psychiatrists, healers, counselors. Like, they have hired the best of the best people because they want to learn how to program and get the algorithm just so much for you that you will never be able to set that damn thing down. Mm-hmm. And so I always remind my kids, I always remind myself, because I can get lost in that death scroll too, right? Sometimes it's like, you're being programmed to right now, kid. Come on, set the phone down. These guys got you. They got you. They're going to get you. And that's just such an important thing to remember. I think that you're probably onto it. We have more time in front of screens than we ever have before. Mm-hmm. We spend less time in nature. We spend less time with real life, in-person connection. And those things, it makes sense to me that we would be more anxious right now. And hello, we just got out of a freaking pandemic.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we don't pandemic well. We learned that about ourselves. That's not a strong suit of ours. So it makes sense to me that we're coming out and we're a little bit anxious. How do you coach your folks to work with anxiety? What kinds of tools do you offer your people?
We work primarily with cognitive behavior therapy.
Oh, perfect. I love it.
Yeah. And some of our therapists, I'm in the process of finding a training now for them. I want somebody to come into the practice to help with EMDR.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And so those are the things that we're working on with people and just making sure that we are being patient and we're making sure that we're making it about the clients. So those are some of the things that I really talk to my clinicians about.
Yeah. Can you help people understand cognitive therapy before? Because, maybe like illustrate it using an example of cognitive therapy, because I've got a couple that I always teach people, and I've probably said them 100 times on this podcast. So we need some new blood here.
So when I think about cognitive behavior therapy, it's saying that if I can change the way that I think, I can change the way that I feel, and I'll change the way that I behave, right? And so if I have, I'm trying to think, if something happens and I'm like, even with the target, did you say target?
Target. Yeah, let's use Target as an example.
You were in Target somewhere, you had a horrible experience, and it's like, okay, I don't like Target. Target is this, Target is that. When you stop and you reframe that thought and you say, I had tons of experiences in Target before where everything went well. This is an isolated experience. It changes the way that you think. It changes the way that you feel, and it'll change that behavior where you'll go in Target again. Right?
There it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my favorite cognitive behavioral tip is grounding yourself in truth. And in this moment, ask yourself what is real, mm-hmm. what makes the most sense. For people that like to read books or listen to books, the book is called, I'm going to try to find the author here really fast, but the book is called Feeling Good. Have you ever read this?
Nope.
Fantastic book. It's called Feeling Good, and it's a book all about cognitive therapy. And I recommend it to just about everybody that I know, because it's just such a fantastic book. Let me get everybody the title of this thing, because I want to make sure if you're like, well, you can't just bring it up and then not tell me what it is. Feeling Good by David Burns. Mm-hmm. That's the book. Yeah. And so that's an outstanding one if you want to learn more about cognitive behavioral therapy, mm-hmm. and why it might be helpful for you. I would say get after it. As we start to wind down our time together, Tiffany, anxiety is a big thing. Depression's a big thing. Are you guys seeing a lot more folks entertaining ideas of suicide too?
Thank God. In our practice, we don't get a lot of it. Okay. I mean, they may have thoughts, they're fleeting thoughts, but we haven't had any, you know, plans or anything like that. No, not too heavy on the suicidal ideation.
That's good, right? Because I see that ticking up in all these different places. And here's the next question. Okay, so if you're not seeing an uptick there, are you as a whole, not just your practice, but the business at large, are you seeing it trending younger?
Absolutely.
Really?
Much younger. Yeah. In fact, I mean, and it's interesting you said that because it triggered a memory for me. That the person in our practice who, you know, we did have to have hospitalized, and it's just that one in the last couple of years, was a 12-year-old. It's a 12-year-old. So really interesting. Yeah, but it's much younger now.
What do you think that is?
I don't know. I have not done much research, and I don't want to blame everything on social media. But I would like to say that has a big part. And I just think that the world is so different in terms of how, like, I used to go outside and play, and I used to have activities and used to be able to kind of move the energy out of my body. And now, we, like you said, so much screen time, and you're there on the phone or the computer, and you're just sitting in it and not doing the things to kind of generate the energy or move it out of your body. And I don't always believe that young people have the outlets or feel like they have people that they can go to and they can talk to and can share concerns with and really feel heard.
Okay, well then this is a great place to wind down. Mm-hmm. You're in the business. You coach other counselors and therapists now. So how can us parents provide an environment or do better about providing an environment where they will want to come to us?
Being present, right? And not just in the room, but listening, having conversations, trying to really understand and providing guidance and being open to say, like, with this thing with a lot of kids are vaping, oh, not my child. Really pay attention, you know, be open. Be a safe space. Be a safe space. And I know that is a delicate balance between being a parent that's saying, no, we have to have these rules, but saying, like, I also want to be a place, a soft place for you to land. And so being able to find a balance between those two.
Is that in how, like, the questions we ask them? Is that in how we respond to the information they give us?
The questions we ask is the response that we give. It's also us and what we model, you know? And so if we're always on the phone, if we're never really tuned in, even in the car, we're doing something else. It's like, what are you modeling? Are you modeling that you're important to me, that you're a priority, that you matter? That's important. As you notice, the questions that you ask in the very beginning, those years matter. And time goes by so fast. And so if you don't take the time to cultivate and develop that relationship really early on, you may kind of miss the mark a little bit. You may miss that window where they feel like they want to come to you and have conversations and trust you with what they think are the big things. Like, some of them are, some of them are not. But you want your children to trust you and come to you with things versus going to one of their peers who don't know much more than they know.
Right. Yeah, but do they? Because I always wonder this. Because I mean, listen, I'm a parent of two teenagers, and I'm observant. I see the way other parents are treating their kids and the things they let them do, the things they don't let them do. You know, I'm paying attention to some of these conversations, and sometimes I feel like a lot of us didn't have good experiences with our own parents, and we almost seem hell bent on giving the same experience to our children and not letting them in the way that we know we probably should, right? Because we're trying to strike this balance of the old school and the new school. Like, I mean, I think that's a lot of the turmoil in the world right now is there's the way we've done it and there's the way we're going to keep doing it. And they're not necessarily the same thing. There's some similarities, but they're a little different. And I think we're navigating that space right now as parents, and we're trying to be a little bit of the old school. Like, we still think, you know, certain things are important, respect, you know, how you act in school, how you treat people, some of that stuff. But we're letting go of other things that maybe our parents would have beat the hell out of us for, right?
And as you were mentioning that, I was like, well, this is not necessarily from a therapist perspective, but just from my own personal experience as a mom.
Yeah.
Like, my mom did not play. You could not talk back. It was certain things.
Right, cool. Right.
It was, you know, you are to be seen and not heard. And I was like, oh, no, I am not going to parent that way. My daughter will have whatever she wants. I'm going to be able to provide a good life for her. She has a voice. She can be seen and heard. And now I'm like, who did I create? What's going on here? So, yeah.
You created a monster, Tiffany.
So entitled and so spoiled. And I'm like, where's the work ethic? And, you know, and you want me to do everything for you, clearly, that you're capable of doing for yourself.
Right.
And so it might be some of that too.
Yeah, it's so interesting. But they but they do have other things that I think are really cool. Like, I think they're way better with their friends. They're way more accepting of people. They're absolutely not as, like, agitated as I feel like we all were. So there's some good pieces to this too. I like I said, we're just in the middle of this transition right now, and that's what's so hard to chew off. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. I loved chatting with you today, Tiffany. Graceful Growth Counseling. It's in Chicago, but as you heard, she's virtual. And so, if you are looking to take the next step in your own mental health journey, I mean, I didn't have her on to, like, pimp her services or anything like that. I just had her on to tell her story. But I mean, clearly after having a discussion, you can, at least in my opinion, you can feel where this is coming from. And that's a huge piece of the puzzle to me. So if you feel called, if you feel drawn to take the next steps to do something better for yourself, to, as she said, step into some abundance. And wouldn't that be so wonderful for almost all of us? She's just a click away, and we will put her information in our show notes to make sure that you all can get connected to her. I always like to end with a really funny kind of lifestyle, boring question. And that's like, so what are you going to do the rest of the day? Like, let's just pretend we're like old buddies and we hang out sometimes. It's like, so what are you doing tonight?
I have one more meeting.
Okay.
And I'm going to go and get me a scoop of ice cream from
Yes.
with a sugar cone in a cup.
Hell yeah. What kind of ice cream?
It's called, oh my God, my sister. I always have to call her and ask her. Gold Medal Ribbon. That's the name of it. Gold Medal Ribbon.
I love it. I love it. Well, enjoy your ice cream. Enjoy your night, and all the best to you and your family as you keep on moving through this thing we call life.
Thank you so much for having me.
We have three goals with Learn from People Who Lived It. One, to help you feel less alone. Two, encourage you to seek out a coach, a therapist, a church, anyone who can help you get through your journey and find some healing. Three, when you're ready, share your story with us.
Find Learn from People Who Lived It wherever you get podcast. Search it using all one word, Learn from People Who Lived It.